Welcome back. Hour number two. Glad you're along tonight. I'm Jeff Rentz, and we are going to spend some time with one of the most remarkable young ladies I've ever had the pleasure to meet. She is brilliant. She has attended over 100 of the top, most powerful get-togethers, conferences of world leaders. She sits in a unique position to watch what's going on. She has seen this all coming probably from as long ago as anyone and predicted it as accurately and written about it as cogently as anyone could. She is Joan Vian, and Joan is back with us tonight to talk about, we could talk about the G20, but this is just another step forward in the plan to take the world and reconfigure it, reconstitute it, if you will, in the shape that the controllers wish. And this has been a plan that has been unfolding for quite some time. In fact, over a century, maybe two. Hi, Joan.
Hello, Jeff. Good to be on your show again.
Thank you. It's nice to have you back again.
You're welcome.
Now, these folks in this massive theft, well, it's actually a redistribution of wealth is what it is, I guess, because the wealthy are just buying up, you know, pennies on the dollar, all kinds of fortunes that are no longer fortunes. I've read stories about how many ex-millionaires and even ex-billionaires there are walking around singing the blues, if they're singing at all. It's quite a scene. It's a big shakedown. There is no loyalty amongst thieves, no honor. No one is really safe, I guess, unless you work for or did work for Goldman Sachs at one time or another. I don't know. But tell us how you see it.
Well, there's so many facets, so many ways to explain what's going on.
Right.
So I'm going to approach it this evening because this is what's on my heart. This is what's been on my heart for a long time. And that is, it was very telling and revealing that President Obama, who has only been senator for 3 years, who has come out of obscurity.
He was brought now out of obscurity. With great intent.
Out of obscurity. Yeah. You're right. I stand corrected. Well said. Is now the president, excuse me, of the United States of America, a country that once was the strongest country in the world. And in his speech there at the G20 in a press briefing with Gordon Brown, I'm sure you're aware that one of the last things he said was that he loved the Queen.
Well, he gave her an iPod. I guess that tells the story, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. The bottom line is, it doesn't appear that you can be anything today in the American Congress unless you are an Anglophile. And this fits in well with the British desire to rule the world. It fits in very well with the vision of Cecil John Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
It fits in very well with the quest of the British East India Company. It fits in very well with the whole idea that the British, quote-unquote, are the finest race in the world, and that if the whole world were British, then we wouldn't have any more war.
Yeah, everybody would be dead except them. They're one of the most efficient killing societies in history.
Absolutely, and in light of the fact that it wasn't too long ago, about 6 weeks ago or so, that Gordon Brown was in the United States, maybe it was a month, that he was in the United States, and he announced the knighthood of Edward Kennedy mm-hmm. at a joint session of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did he announce it, mm-hmm. but he was given a standing, roaring applause, not only when he walked in, but when he announced the knighthood, and he publicly called him Sir Edward Kennedy.
Unreal.
Now, this was another step. We talk about steps. These people have been taking baby steps, and now they're getting bigger, the stride that they're taking.
You got it. That's the word.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The bottom line is, George Bush 1 and Ronald Reagan were knighted after they left office. The same with John Warner. He was just knighted, maybe it was in January, I don't remember anymore, but he was knighted. He's no longer a senator. And he proudly said that he was an Anglophile.
Why did they knight John Warner? I don't. Was it the Elizabeth Taylor thing? I don't get it.
No. Yeah, we would think it was Elizabeth Taylor, but they knighted him because of all the things he's done for the British government.
Yeah.
And we will assume while he was senator.
Uh-huh.
You know, there is a secret group of people. They're part of an organization called the Pilgrim Society, and they were started as a result of the death of Cecil Rhodes, and there was a Pilgrim Society started in Britain, and then there was one a year later started in the United States, which was comprised of all of America's wealthiest industrialists at the time, you know, the Mellons and the Whitneys and the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers, you know, all those people of that ilk. And so we are seeing this amazing picture unfold for people who have eyes to see and ears to hear,
mm-hmm.
whereby we have an American president who has, for the first time that I can recall in history, said publicly and blatantly, "I love the Queen." Well, excuse me, what does that mean, and why is an American president saying that? I think it's very interesting, the whole timing to this. We had the first G20 meeting in the United States in November, and then we had, just, you know, as it works out, a new president and a new opportunity for the Queen to host these leaders of the top, if you will, 20 countries of the world, and we'll talk about them in a minute. And it's not a state visit. You know, it was just sort of like an informal, "Why don't you come by and see me sometime, boys," kind of visit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, they all got their marching orders. Let's call an ace and a spade a spade.
Sure.
Let's talk about who comprises the G20. First, you have the group of eight countries, and you have the United Kingdom and Canada, along with the United States, Germany, Japan, Italy, France, and Russia, okay, in the United States, okay? So that's the G8. So you have two countries there that are members of the Commonwealth. You then add China, Malaysia, Korea, Australia, Indonesia, India, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Brazil, South Africa, Argentina, and Mexico. Those are the countries that comprise the G20. Now, what they, if you take a look at these countries, you have the UK and Canada, you have Australia, you have Indonesia. India is not a Commonwealth country, but we all know that they bow to the Queen. You have Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia was in the early part of the 19th century. The whole Middle East was reconfigured by the British, and that includes Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Yemen, all those countries there, UAE, all those countries in the Gulf. They
all
drew to the Queen.
The UK and British Petroleum just drew the map, right?
That's right. So then you know, you have South Africa. Now, as far as Mexico, well, you have NAFTA. And so, you know, the truth of the matter is, when you take a look at NAFTA uniting Mexico, the U.S., and Canada, as I have raised before, the question should be asked, does the Queen of Canada become the Queen of the United States? And so here we are in Britain, of all places. Surprise, surprise, it just happens to be, you know, where the Queen could have a special audience with the Obamas or President Obama all by himself. And, you know, really, so who do you think has the power? Do you think it's Obama or do you think it's the Queen? Well, anybody who's extremely naive would say Obama, but they would be very sadly mistaken. So when I take a look at this meeting, and, you know, Jeff, I could have been there if I so choose.
Right. I know.
Gone.
Yeah.
I could have been there. You know, I have I've sacrificed a whole lot over the last 14 years. I'm not done sacrificing. It's just that it has to be a little different, the kind of sacrifice I do, in that my body said I needed the sun and the Sun in the Ocean, and that's where I'm at.
You don't need that kind of angst. You know, you with your wisdom, you could write the script from here.
Well, actually, you're absolutely right, because, you know, all the protesting that was on TV, that is the exact same diagram, that's not the word I want, but anyway, diagram as what happened in Seattle at the World Trade Organization.
Same template, exactly. Same thing.
Same template, that's what I want. Yeah, okay, I was on the ground in Seattle. I saw the anarchists. I was ruffled by protesters here and there when they found out or knew or figured out that I was a reporter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was manhandled. I was screamed at. I was pushed around the whole nine yards. And I went to the police throughout the whole day saying, why can't you do something with these protesters? I saw the protesters start with songs and fun.
Oh, it's amazing. Hold on, Joni. Hold on. We have to pause just for a minute. We'll pick that right up because it's very relevant. You folks watching the protests and the control of media, you're watching theater. Be right back. Talking with Joan Vian, who is on vacation, and we're very happy she is. Okay, Johnny, you went up to Seattle. You saw the charade. You understood what was going on.
Absolutely.
You went to the cops, and you said, all right, why aren't you doing anything? And what did the cops say?
They said they didn't have any orders. And, they didn't have any orders. Their hands were tied.
I see.
And, I mean, you know, by that time, the protesters were starting little fires. They were taking those newspaper stands and throwing, you know, the little metal things and throwing them in the street, and you could see that they were starting to do things. I watched from a couple stories up, watching in a park the anarchists rev up, mm-hmm. you know, before they did their thing. I didn't mm-hmm. know they were going to do their thing. You know, and I was very fortunate. I just felt that things were getting pretty hot in downtown Seattle, and I left. I got back to my hotel about 20 minutes away, and I turned TV on, and everything had exploded.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was pretty awful. It was pretty shocking to think that that could happen in America. But having covered the number of meetings I have all over the world, I have experienced the protesters in Canada, in Washington, D.C., several times at the IMF World Bank, in Davos, Switzerland, and I forget where else, but I've experienced them. And, you know, I have seen, and in fact, outside of the IMF World Bank, I had an exchange, I know you can't imagine this, with some young protesters, and they were trying to take away my constitutional rights, and I was trying to get free of them.
Were they masked?
Keep.
Did they have masks on?
No, mm-hmm. No, they did not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the truth of the matter is they even brought over the national coordinator to talk to me. And, you know, some of these kids are paid. Some of them do it for fun, you know. When I saw this in London, now, you know, I've been to the Bank of London. First of all, they were in the city. Now, the city, THE city, is 600 acres, a private corporation inside the city of London proper.
You've heard me say this many, many times. The City of London bankers. This is what we're talking about.
Yes.
Not London, the huge metropolis. We're talking about this small little, it's almost like the Vatican of money in a way,
mm-hmm.
if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And the Queen has to ask permission to enter.
Oh,
go through this.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you see
that
ties in. Let me say one quick thing. This ties into what historians, honest historians, say. The day that Benjamin Disraeli walked into Parliament was the day the British Empire changed hands. That's what people look back and say. In some respects, that was it. From then on, things changed. But whatever, it was a big day.
There are a lot of things that have changed. I'm sure you're familiar with the 1940 congressional record by Congressman Thorkelson, and he explains a lot of the changes that occurred in America and in Britain. Mm-hmm. And there was a major change, and it was not only Disraeli, but you know, when the Rothschilds, Nathan Rothschild, helped finance the Boer War, along with at the request of his good friend Cecil Rhodes, and handed South Africa to the British Empire on a gold platter, gold and diamond platter. You know, that is I think a place where the British Empire, the British royal family, and the Rothschilds started a new relationship, a very intimate relationship.
And
while we're talking about this, I would just remind your listeners that they can go to womensgroup.org, www.womensgroup, womensgroup.org. We have a number of videos available, talking not only about the credit crisis, talking about 21st century feudalism and who rules the world, and our newest one talking about when central banks rule the world. And so, you know, we are looking at a real major con snow job, because if we go back to the Garden of Eden, Satan used deceit, deception, and distortion. That was really the first sin in the Garden of Eden. Deceit, deception, distortion. Not the fact that Eve ate the apple. Anyway, from there...
Well, deceit, deception, and distortion are the primary MO ingredients of what the controllers are doing, and that's how they operate. Uh-huh. And so nothing really has changed. Evil is still evil.
That's right. And that's exactly what Solomon said how many years ago, thousands of years ago. He said there's nothing new under the sun. It's just our turn, our time, and we're seeing the players during our time in life. Mm-hmm. And it's up to each one of us to determine what we're going to do. Are we going to expose? What are we going to do? Because I'm not a violent person per se, I expose. And that's my way. Knowledge is power. And for all of us, knowledge is power. So we have these little ruffians allowed to do this in the city of London, the International Bankers City of London, and they are even allowed to protest at the Bank of England. Now, that isn't all planned and managed, and then destroy some windows at the Royal Bank of Scotland.
Oh, I know. It's just pathetic.
It is pathetic.
It's so transparent. Hold on. We have to pause again here. Joan is with us, and she is just an extraordinary person. I hope you'll read her newest article, which is up at rents.com. Just click under her name there, Planning the Steps to World Government, and clicking on her name, of course, will take you to womensgroup.org. All kinds of things there. Back in just a couple of minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along tonight. Thanks for choosing to be with us. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Joan Vian. And go to her website, womensgroup.org. Womensgroup.org. Joan has, for many, many years, 14 years now, and going on 30. 40. Seems like a lifetime. She's been all over the world, talked and written about the system and how it's shaping up and being forced down the throat of the world, whether it wants it or not. That's the bottom line. And the top line, and all lines in between. What you're seeing being played out now, again, is theater. It's simply the public face of the controllers as they work the mechanism of massive global reorganization. Go ahead, Joanie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it's so amazing. I read the final report today by the G20. First of all, this is just like a major United Nations meeting. The G20 comprises 80%, 80 or 85% of the world's GDP. And so these are the rich countries, including the smaller rich countries, if you will, like Saudi Arabia and Argentina. And so this is like a UN meeting. This is a major G8 meeting, because it is the G8 plus the other 12.
Sure.
This is a major meeting. And in their final report, it's most interesting that they, of course, talk about reshaping our regulatory systems. They talk about all countries adopting a global accounting standard. Well, if you're going to have world government, you have to have both of those. And as my videos show, I view the credit crises as something that was planned and managed. And it's most interesting because in the report that you have up on your website, I talk about finding this document called the 1994 Human Development Report. And in it, it was talking about what would happen in the future, that we would need a world central bank. And this was 1994. Hmm. They talked about, of course, we needed a World Trade Organization, mm-hmm. and that happened in 94. And then we would need an Economic Security Council. And that the IMF should be greatly expanded. And in the 94 report, they quote, "It will probably take some time and probably some international financial crises before a full-blown world central bank can be created." And so, you know, it's most interesting that we have that. Here we are, we have that. And that is what is going on. We have a full-scale world central bank being created right before our very eyes. We
sure.
have the complete empowerment of a global level above the nation state with regard to finances.
And the salesmanship will be a piece of cake, because things are going to be so bad, most people
yeah.
will say, okay, save us. It's problem, reaction, solution. Same old thing. So they're going to say, put it together,
yeah.
bring it on, because we need it. Without this, they'll actually have people believe the world will die if it doesn't have
well,
this.
Well, we already have that in our Congress. Yeah. I mean, there was some congressman who, I didn't catch his name, he basically said in grave frustration, and I say grave frustration because those people on Capitol Hill, they are in the middle of one frying pan at this point, and this guy, first of all, they really don't know what's happening. They don't understand who's who and who the players are.
They don't.
Maybe one or two people do.
You're right. They
really
do
don't.
Not understand.
And this guy said to Geithner, he was just furious. He said, "Don't give me excuses. Just do it. Just fix the situation." You know, man, those guys, you know, they've got Congress eating out of their hands as if they're gods. I mean, come on, Geithner is a relatively young man. He's well connected. He's been groomed by Summers Rubin. He, you know, Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, he's got the whole background to fit.
They're all players.
The position, yeah, they are all players. And all of a sudden, you know, come on, this is crazy. This young man, excuse me, he's younger than me, but anyway, this younger man, and he's now become God or a demigod. And actually what he is he is a change agent. and he's basically responsible for the transfer of America's, he and Paulson, for the last vestiges of American financial and economic sovereignty and our assets being transferred to the Federal Reserve.
Correct.
And when we look at the G20 today, so, okay, fine, they came up with $1.1 trillion, not $950 billion, not $1.2 trillion, not $1 trillion, but $1.1 trillion. 9/11, anybody? That number 11 is a very wicked number. And $1.1 trillion to help the poor countries of the world. Now, you know, John Maynard Keynes wanted some kind of liquidity, a global type of liquidity, and he called it Bancorp, and it didn't fly very well. But then the IMF, International Monetary Fund, created the special drawing rights in 1969, mm-hmm. which is a form of international currency. The special drawing right is currently, every 5 years it's reconfigured, it's currently configured of four currencies. And a lot of this money is going to go to the IMF in the form of special drawing rights to create a type of global liquidity for what has to be done on the international level, they say. And so we are seeing an empowerment of the IMF. We are seeing not only an empowerment with regard to outright power to be able to enforce, mm-hmm. but we are also seeing a financial power being given to the IMF in the form of an additional money, the special drawing right, which is how members pay their dues. Mm-hmm. So the IMF is, of course, being empowered. In the article that I wrote, I talk about how in 1994 they said all these things would be needed in the future, and here we are. This is the future. From 1994 to 2009, 15 years, this is the future.
That's about 1993, 94. That was the time when the whole derivatives thing began to be launched as mm-hmm. well and really take root. So this was the mm-hmm. big push, the big final looting, the big scam. They all knew where it was going. Hold on, Joan, please. We'll take one more break and come back. Joan Bion is my guest. Her website available by clicking on her name at rents.com and guests, or just remember womensgroup.org. Back in a minute. Okay, and we're back with Joan Bion. The G20 melodrama is underway. Just a quick question, rather obvious, but I mean, are these people actually going to sit down and create policy? No, I'm talking about macro policy, and the answer is essentially no. Micro policy, probably, but this is all again preordained. It's not pre-rehearsed necessarily, but Joan, what are we going to get out of this? Pretty much predictable results.
What are we going to get out of this? Well, we're going to get a lot of rhetoric, number one. Number two, little by little, they are going to implement. You know, there are many, many people, many, many groups working on this global problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned in my article, Dr. Joseph Stiglitz is heading up a...
He's being quoted a lot lately.
Yeah, he's heading up a commission at the United Nations to study this problem, and I read his report, and it's very interesting because his group is calling for the G20 to become a fully recognized economic security council at the United Nations on par with the Security Council, you
mm-hmm.
know, which does,
mm-hmm.
Of course, war and that kind of thing. And so we are just seeing a lot of movement, a lot of dynamics, a lot of energy being put forth, because these are all steps, step by step, step by step, to create a world governmental structure. Now, Obama's going to come home and he's going to face Congress. And so I can tell you what will happen. When he starts to implement some of these things, he's going to meet with the views of Congress, who are going to say, wait a minute, you're bypassing us. And then what will happen is we will end up, if there's any kind of negative part on the from Congress, then we're going to do what's going to happen is we're going to see a September, October happen. The market could still fall 20-40%, you know, and Congress will be blackmailed again to get in line. Otherwise, you know, like somebody said, this could really turn out to be a full-blown depression. But they're still making, they're still moving ahead. The United States has already adapted global accounting laws. Little by little, Congress is getting the hint that we have to change to global regulatory system. So those things are moving ahead. Many of the things that the blueprint, which Hank Paulson drew up, which Timothy Geithner not only approved when he was at the Federal Reserve, the New York Federal Reserve last
uh-huh.
year,
uh-huh.
but now as Treasury Secretary, he might give him a new name to make it sound a little bit more proprietary for him. But truth of the matter is they're implementing those things. 10 years ago, the Financial Stability Forum, and I wrote about it and I interviewed people long time ago about the Financial Stability Forum. What was it? What was it going to do? The Financial Stability Forum, I was very surprised. They're renaming it. It's going to be called the Financial Stability Board, and it will collaborate with the IMF. See, now you're starting to see baby steps here with these global players now. They're now starting to interact as an early warning system for what's going to happen in the world, that the IMF can come and help and tell these countries, no, you can't do this, or, you know, you have a little bit too much debt, or you have a little too much of this or that. You know, this is a totally planned economy. You know, communism is one thing where it's political, and then it becomes economic. And what we're now seeing is global communism. Actually, it's global fascism. But the bottom line is, every little thing is going to be planned and managed, and they're just getting ready to do all that. You know, when you have a floating currency like we have, what that really means is that you are able, if any country gets out of line, you are able to use their currency to whack them into position. You know, we saw that during the Asian crises. There were a number of countries that didn't want to participate in what was called the financial agreement through the World Trade Organization. And they did not want to participate because it would mean that these countries would have to give away their financial and economic sovereignty. And so they said no to this part of the World Trade Organization financial, can't get it at this moment, but anyway, this financial section of the WTO, and within days, their currency was completely obliterated. And, you know, there are things that can be done to bring countries, any country, into compliance. There are things that can be done to bring any person, whether it's a president, a prime minister, a senator, a congressperson, whatever, into line, because of the power that is being created here. It should be, I think everybody should know that the Queen's not just some little old lady. We should really be asking, why wasn't Gordon Brown the whole center of attention here? Why didn't he have a dinner? Why was it the Queen? You know, if she's just a figurehead and she has no power,
right?
Why would they even bother with the Queen?
Of course, all you have to do is watch. You've got, folks, just watch. Watch who is subservient to whom in the media and the events of state. It's pretty obvious.
Oh, yes, it is. Very obvious. And so, you know, here we are, the 1994 Human Development Report called for certain things. They sounded far-fetched. They talked about some of these things being far-fetched. I quoted from Jean Tinbergen, who was a 1969 Nobel Economics Prize winner, who was calling for world government. And, you know, voila, here we are. Just so amazing, just so amazing, Jeff, in our time, right. Our turn, our
right.
time.
Right. When you look around and see the statistics here, such as we can really have any confidence in them, initial jobless claims, the highest now since 1982, and they're higher than that. It's all figures and smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. It's a shell game. This country is in very, very poor condition. Not by any accident. This is all, as Joan has pointed out, for a long, long time, all been orchestrated, all controlled. And yes, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. It's everything's run by conspiracy. And conspiracy theorists, no. Conspiracy researchers, yes. That's what we do.
Well, that's right. And after a while, a conspiracy is not a conspiracy, it's fact. And, you know, that's what you've been doing, that's what I've been doing, that's what a lot of people have been doing. Because, you know, even as I think about all of this, I was thinking about the movie Braveheart. And in the movie Braveheart, you have the average person, the serf, and they have honesty and morals and integrity, and then you have the king. And then you have the nobles, and they are ruthless, and all they want is more power, and all they want to do is use the serf, because after all, they have no value.
Right.
And yet, it is the few little assets of the serfs that everybody wants. And that's really the same dynamics that we are seeing today. And, you know, for you and I, we are the serfs. And I think of, I don't know his name, the older guy who Amish's, Braveheart's best friend, Amish, who his father looks at him, Amish, and says, "Son, I'm so proud of what I've been able to see, what you became. You know, you're a man. You know, you have all these values. You know, and you stand up and you fight for them. And
right.
I'm so proud that I've seen you come and mature this way." That we could say that of all our fellow Americans, that is what would be the real benefit, Jeff, of what you and I have done and so many of your other very powerful and noble guests, William Ingall and so many others.
Yeah, I've been really blessed to spend time and to help those people gain a wider audience for their brilliance. And you shine as brightly as any. And I continue to be amazed at the simple fact that the media, and we know this, that the media does such an awesome job of controlling the public. I saw a story yesterday. I'm going to just touch on it very quickly. the brighter young students in UK schools are actually dumbing themselves down so they can have friends and be cool and be accepted. Individual achievement now and intelligence is being considered and treated as if it is some kind of a disease now by the masses. And it's a self-policing paradigm that has been installed and instigated by the media. And it still amazes me to watch it happen.
Well, every person has to become a leader. And a leader is nothing but a group of one doing what they see is right.
Right. Well, we can hope that happens. And we'll keep trying our best, and you will, I know, to bring those people who have that kind of courage and integrity forward and let our young people know that it's okay to be intelligent and to succeed, please.
And to be an individual.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joni. Great to talk with you. Enjoy your vacation.
You
sure earned it. Okay.
Will do. Bye now.
Joan Vian. Back in just a few minutes. Glad you're along.